think we're coming in. Are we coming in? We're coming in 11 minutes early, but that's okay. I pushed this one. But what I wanted to say is, have you ever been in? So you find yourself in a conversation here at this moment. Has this moment ever played out where you are talking with another teacher, and they're sharing their experiences about a student, and the whole time, like, they're sharing, maybe, you know, they're sharing things that are kind of, they're doing kind of like the dark assessments. They're just like, the kid doesn't do this, the kid doesn't do that, all this stuff that's just like interesting, but I don't know, maybe not valuable, right? You don't feel like you're generating anything. You're just sort of on the receiving end of observing a bad relationship between a teacher and a student. But then you're thinking to yourself, so you take that at face value, someone's saying this about a student, and you're thinking to yourself, man, that's not the kid that I know. That's not the kid that I know. And you might say, I see that. I see how sometimes maybe they're you know, playing around during class time, or they tend to get up and walk around. Sometimes those observations, though, I find are kind of couched in a misunderstanding of compliance. So the teacher is sort of expecting and needing the kid to behave a certain way in order to be a student. And I think you and I have kind of landed on this before, like, the kids arrive as kids, they arrive as students. We're not taking anything away from them or saying they have to be, there's no bar that we're setting that in order to qualify as being a student, that they have to be a certain version of them. They're just diverse as students. They're diverse as kids. They're diverse as little humans. So I was mentioning to you in the on-ramp, one of the kind of, it's not a get to know you. It's an ongoing organizational tool that I like to work with my learning strat students. I like to do it with a lot of, if I'm teaching different classes, I tend to be spec ed and I do learning strats more often than not, is I have the students do tasks on colored cards. And students can also, they use digital tools to do this, post-it notes, whatever. But I'll provide the colored cards. And I have several. I have like yellow and pink and orange and green and a really bright blue. And I have them do some on-ramp activities that kind of, they're like, you know, part one of the three-part lesson, the get to know you, the welcome in, the attendance, kind of get them settled, get them talking. It's the conversation that leads into the lesson. And I mentioned to you, I mentioned to everybody, because I pushed the idea onto Twitter that late last week, I went into my home school and I cleaned out all my supplies. Like, everything that I had brought in September, we had the bag of work. Is it the bag of work and the box of stuff? I guess we can kind of, I don't know. I don't think we had any good, let's call it the BOS. It's the box, no, the BOF. No, BOS. Yeah, box of stuff. I basically, you know, I brought in my crates and packed up all my boxes of stuff. Three of them. And I actually, before the April break, am I doing this right? Was it just before the April break? We didn't come back from the April break, right?
Correct.
Okay. So it was that Friday. That Friday, I actually brought home two other BOSs. So I had five or six BOSs in my basement, boxes of stuff, box of stuffs. So anyways, I went in early last week, mid last week, and I cleared out the rest of it. Still kind of archiving, curating, organizing it all. But I started to go through some of these cards that the students had done when we were together, because we did get my school board in our mode of teaching the adaptive model. I've mentioned it before. We had one period face-to-face, a long period. It was a double period, 150 minutes. And then everyone would go home in the afternoon for three shortened digital periods. And then the courses would rotate through that face-to-face. So I managed to get in one session with my learning strats kids, my grade 11s. And I'm going through it, and it's just circling back to, this is really, it's wonderful assessment stuff, because to have And I've gotten to know all the students. So this was like week two, some of these cards that I'm looking at right now, week two of being together. And now that I've gotten to know them more, their character and their, you know, what makes them human first, like it just screams out on these cards. And it's interesting, at the time, I don't know if I would have thought it just kind of clever, some of the responses, some of the things that they did, interesting, funny. But now I feel like it really is, it's clearer that that there's more to these kids than when we just, you know, because they've revealed, they've shared, not that I was sort of assuming any less, but that they've, it's very clear that there's so much more going on there than when it was first presented. And I'm not saying anything groundbreaking. That's my Edu-Celeb moment. So much more going on there than we suspected. Hashtag Clefs and Edu-Celeb. But it's just funny because, you know, one of the tasks that I like to do the students is that I think I told recycle, reuse, repurpose, and I'll show them or tell them a thing. And I'm like, what would you use this for? What could you use this for? Get them doing some lateral thinking, divergent thinking, some creativity. Sometimes it's even prototyping. Some of the things that the kids say, it's like our empathy engines. Like, I think that's what it reminded me of. They're suggesting these things to use it for. I'm like, man, you could totally sell that. You should do that. And you know, the students in the class are like, what are you talking about? That's totally ridiculous. I'm like, yeah, but no, but that's what makes it awesome. So yeah, anyways, it was a dried out pen that was the suggestion. And the things that some of the students said were pretty hilarious. So one student said, you know, you take the ink out of it and you can use it as a spitball machine. I don't know the last time I saw a spitball machine. That's pretty awesome though. When was the last time you saw a spitball machine?
It's high school. Still,
yeah, exactly. High school. So you're talking back in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
Okay. They also said, you know, I guess they thought there was some sort of a spring in this thing. So they said you could turn the spring into a ring. And I think I've done that. I think I've actually taken the spring out of one of those click pens and kind of curled it around itself, and you can kind of just like thread it into itself, and you could wear it on your finger like a ring or have it as an earring. But it was funny. The last one it made me giggle. So a dried out pen, the student wrote, throw it at your local pervert. Just, get away, pervert. Get away. Right? Throw your dried out pens at the local pervert.
This is how high school kids talk, eh?
This is, well, you know what? Maybe.
I'm just saying.
Maybe this is how, you know, this type of comedy or this type of kind of cheeky humor is also, there's an element of safety. Like, I think I'll have to say that. I think in order sometimes to access humor as humor, and let's say not humor as a defense mechanism, I think that's it's really, really different. And I see this is humor as safety. So this particular student, this is humor as safety, as in they're revealing a little bit about the way they kind of see the world, but also really just feeling safe enough to kind of throw up that's a great deadpan line. And not necessary and unexpected, like it's surprising. I'm reading it, I was just like, you know what it was? It's a scroll stopper. And I mentioned that before, you know, the things that as you're going through your feed and you just stop and snort for a second, you're like, that's just so funny. That's actually a really funny line. And I guess you could take it as a step deeper. I mean, you know, I guess you could take, if I chose to, I could do the follow-up and say, oh, you know, like, is there cause for concern here? Do you need student, do you need dried out pens? Because there's a pervert in your neighborhood and you need to, like, you know, get away, pervert. But as I've gotten to know the student, this is their sense of humor. They have a lot of really great kind of zinger one-liners, and their brain is always working. Like, it's always coming up with different, like, even the other pieces that they've created are, that one's pretty snappy. That line's pretty snappy. But then there's other pieces where I look at their drawings and I can see some really, like when I say the safety and creativity and the safety to be funny, um, you can't do this on demand as a teacher. It reminds me a lot of some of the conversations at a previous school that I was at, where all you really can do as the teacher in your get to know you, the whole here's a survey, in the icebreakers, you know, you hand out a Google survey to your kids and basically a form letter to get to know them. There's nothing really safe about that, right? There's only compliance. So before I left my last school, we were digging into what is the difference between in those get to know you activities. What is the measurable and technical difference, equitable difference in those get to know you activities, where you're not rolling in as the teacher and handing out a piece of paper, asking the student to list off their preferred name, asking the student like who's the best person to call at home, demanding basically, because that's what the piece of paper does. It demands that they put down their three favorite hobbies, that they, you know, what's your favorite food? What do you do on the week? Like, and then questions about what they do when they're not at school. Like that gets into the zone of interrogation, and interrogation and compliance, they go close together, right? So what I love about some of these free form activities is that I try and think about so much of my practice, especially in the get to know you stage, as I'm trying to create invitations to do a thing so that students offer back an invitation to get to know them. And, you know, I dig it. And I don't have, you know, I mentioned the other one that I love the students doing. I'll show this one here. So asking the students to draw me, and what I want ask them to do is try and capture one or two lines that I say. So I showed you this one in the on-ramp. So that one, so that was their picture of me. There was their drawing, which is not bad, because they don't like, this isn't a full class. So we took maybe 15 minutes at the beginning of class, and I'm walking around the class. So this person's tracking me and drawing me. And then that was the quote. So at the end, what I asked them to do is don't put the quote onto the end. You can grab a bunch of quotes, but see if you can wait to the end to actually put the quote. And you just leave it on your desk. And the students always left you could see the paper clip on there. So usually by the end of the semester, they have a fat stack like this on the corner of their desk, and they're just adding another card to it. So this is kind of like they keep going back to this. So anyways, yeah, the quote on there, I'm teaching my kids how to play Fortnite. They found that really hilarious, the students. I'm like, yeah, it's important for me. It's important for me to learn about the game, but also learn about how my children behave in the game. So I'll leave it at that. There's my TED talk. Like I said, like I started this, Clef's an edgy celeb. Hashtag that.
Clef is an edgy celeb.
Yeah.
I think that activity that you do with your kids to get to, as an invitation to get to know them, is really cool, because I'm pretty sure many of them would probably be just like, oh man, this teacher wants me to do this. Okay, fine.
They think I'm whack.
Right.
I think that's what the kids are saying. This dude is whack.
That's it. Like it moves away from compliance to curiosity. Like, what's this guy up to? Okay, you want me to think about how I would recycle a Bic pen? Okay, weirdo. And then they do it, but in doing it, they're providing a part of themselves to you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said, it's an invitation. It's an invitation for that that back and forth that happens when building a relationship. And next thing you know, they're telling you things, or they're sharing things, and you bank all that stuff. Like, you lean on whatever you need to lean on when you need to lean on it to do your job, to help them succeed. There's a lot of good stuff that goes on there. It's cool. I like the idea. I think what I'm going to do this week, I'm going to pick a period during the day, and I'm going to say to the kids, I would like you to draw me and something that you've gotten to know about me over the last 9 months. What is it? Like, I want you to tell me when you think of me, what comes up. And I'll probably need to say, unless it's foul language, unless you do something completely like offside, I'm not going to judge or use any of it for anything. I think it'd be a good laugh. I would like to see your perspective because I don't often get it. So what is something that I often say? What is something that I often do that I don't even realize I'm doing?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see it through your eyes. And if it's offside, well, we'll deal with that. But if it's not offside, then we'll just talk about it and move on. We'll see what people think of it. And I think if people don't do it, I'm not going to make them comply. By 9 months in, if I ask them to do something, they usually do it. But if they, I don't know, if all of a sudden Wi-Fi is not working at certain kids' houses or whatever, I'm not going to push it. But it'd be interesting to see what they say and how they say it.
It'd be cool if you could get them to, it'd be cool if you could, so they do whatever their picture and their phrase, and then scan those and see if you can scan them onto paper that's an iron on, and then get the kids to put them on t-shirts. And you have a whole class, all students with just like Chidiac says, you know, whatever.
That's awesome. That's
and then idea. You have a whole class all with their own drawings of you. There is so just to tag back, there's method to my madness as well. So I really love, part of finding ways to support kids in their learning strategies is to get them using strategies and actively using strategies so that it's not something that sort of sat on the shelf and you're not, you don't see yourself in the center of the strategy. So I really love, and I've loved for a long time, I don't even know which way we want to call it. It's a website. It's a crew. It's a group. It's an organization called the Learning Scientists. And the Learning Scientists put out a list of study strategies that I go back to all the time. And I tell the students at the heart of learning, there's some basic strategies that regardless of your exceptionality, you can access one or two of these. And I always like to put it to them, you know, kind of as a provocation, as in, has anyone ever asked you, did you study for the test or study for the task? And have you ever said yes? And when you were saying yes, do you know what you were saying yes to? Like if someone were to ask you, how do you study? Would you be able to respond in a sort of structured and strategic way? And often the students come back and say, well, I studied, I just read my notes over and over and over again. And I said, okay, that is one style of studying. Is it working for you? So one of the strategies that the Learning Scientists put forward, and I encourage anyone that's checking us out, check out the Learning Scientists. It's cool. Is dual coding. Like dual coding is at its heart, that idea that you can kind of, it's your own personalized version of chunking, but you're chunking chunks together. So something like this, where a student is, I'll cover the student's name off, but where the student's drawing a picture like that of me, right? What I'm able to do, or what I'm able to show the kids, is often I'll scan the pictures and I'll put them up in a slide deck, you know, and I get the permission, you know, can I put these in a slide deck? A month later, I'll play the slide deck and I'll ask the kids, just by this picture, what were we doing in class that day? And not every kid can, but many kids can, like, oh, that was like that Wednesday when we were in class together. And then we also did that lesson on writing resumes. And then you told this funny joke about being in the restaurant business. This is a study tool. Like this exact thing that is so innocuous and we do every day, the idea of dual coding. So a picture gives you access to the knowledge. And I've always thought that it was, you know, that's a primary part of my mandate is to sort of get the, who does this a lot? Pam Agua often will post up pictures about cooking for her family. So she throws these up on Insta. And one of the things that she says is, got to sneak the vegetables in there somehow. So that's what I'm doing. I'm sneaking the vegetables in. The kids don't even realize that they're learning a study tool. But then I'm able to say, remember in week one when we had these pictures, and now we're now 3 weeks down the road and I'm putting up just a slide deck of pictures and you're able to recount what we did in that classroom. Imagine if this was a test scenario. Imagine if this is just your everyday in class. This is the way that you're curating your learning, is that you're writing a little something, you're talking a little something, you're recording a little bit of audio, you're drawing a picture maybe, and then you're packaging up that in a way that's, you know, in a bag of work that you'll go back into in some way. So it's not just as simple as, you know, Clef's ego, draw a picture about me. It does come down to there's science in this. There's the vegetables in this as well. And when the students are, what I want them to be able to do is that when they're someone, I mean, I don't know how often the conversation happens anymore. Did you study for this test? I don't know. But I want them to know that when they're preparing for a test, I tell them two things. Any of the six tools that are on the Learning Scientist website, you should be using this every day with your coursework. And I encourage you to check it out. And probably you do in a lot of ways. Everything from, you know, the dual coding part to it, to also like shifting things. So do a little bit of science, do a little bit of English, then go back to science and see if you can make connections between the two. So you're strengthening. It's like intracurricular things. Like they're just great. There's, you know, talk to someone, talk it out, like just conversation, have an open conversation with someone. These are all the strategies there. So this is my little riff on that. And I have other activities that kind of work through that, but I figure that's kind of the heart of learning strategies, is to get the vegetables in there, invigorate the curriculum a little bit, because it's sand, man. Like it's just like the curriculum, the actual expectations are not, you got to find a way to be inspired to help the kids, because the curriculum doesn't help you. It's a checklist, right? Mm-hmm. So this is my way to get in the learning strategies. I can build in numeracy in this. I can build literacy into this, organizational tools, because I color code the cards. So Clef's an edu-celeb. I'll sell that. So anyways, that's I want to just kind of circle back, because it could be easy to look at this. I know none of our teacher listeners looks at this as just like it's an art ego project. But you know, the other 50,000 or so listeners that we have that are not teachers, that are just craving to understand the system, right? This isn't just about Clef making, you know, well, funny little pictures of myself. I'm decoding. Yeah, there you go. You are, that's right. You are welcome, parents out there. You are welcome.
Now, I want to riff a little bit about that activity.
Do it.
When I do that with my students this week, it is going to be the best learning tool for me as their teacher. Mm-hmm. It really is, because I'm going to see the faces. Who's uncomfortable doing this? Who's comfortable doing this? Who's like, I'm not doing this for you. Like, yeah. It's going to be interesting. Totally not ego-driven at all. In fact, I'm actually looking forward to having a bird's eye view of how they deal with this task. And I'm going to say to them, listen, some of you have voluntarily drawn pictures of me. And I think it's just cool that it's your view of me. Like, that's so cool for me to maybe see things from your perspective, because I don't often get to do that. So this is kind of a cool and, I don't know, I'm thinking relatively safe way, because all you're doing is drawing a picture and maybe writing a quote. It's not like you're writing an essay about your grade 3 teacher. But anyway, then I'm going to watch and see what happens. Do kids engage? Do kids not?
So yours, you got, I always forget that. So you're teaching grade 3s?
I teach grade 3, yeah.
Oh my gosh. This is going to be hilarious. Hilarious.
It could be hilarious.
I think it'll be principally hilarious. And yeah. It would be awesome. Awesome. If you could get printed t-shirts as an artifact of learning.
That would be cool. So anyway, I'm going to give that a shot. I'm going to give that a shot and see what comes of it.
Are you going to provide a template of your head? Or you're just going to have the kids draw it. They just got to go for it.
Just freehand. And I think I'm going to tell them Google Drawing, the app. Mm-hmm. You can use the scribble tool if you want. You can use the shapes if you want. Do whatever you want. Yeah. But you're not doing it on paper and pencil because that's – I'm going to restrict some of their
– constraints, their artistic constraints. I like that.
Very interesting. So Aldo, story time Aldo. That's your nickname, Aldo.
Gather around. Gather around.
Aldo's got a story.
Gather around, Mr.
Aldo says curriculum is a vehicle for developing learning skills and attitudes. Yes, I do agree to some. I do agree, Aldo. I've been struggling with curriculum lately. Wondering.
Can you put that quote up again? I think I need to read it. Yeah.
Sorry. I was
daydreaming. I was looking out the window at squirrels for a second. Curriculum is a vehicle for developing learning skills and attitudes. Would you put it? I don't know if I would put it as the driver. I think part of what makes me uncomfortable is the idea that curriculum's the actual vehicle. Maybe curriculum's the passenger. Controversy. Cuffs and edu celeb. I think in the vehicle, we're gonna just okay. So on, I don't want curriculum as
you don't want it anywhere. You don't want it in any alpha position, do you?
I don't want it holding the wheel.
No, you don't. I knew it right away. I'm like, Clough is not going to let curriculum run this thing. So curriculum can be the spare tire in the trunk. It's in the car.
I think it's more grandma that we're dropping off at bingo. Like, I think that's it. I think curriculum is it's not. Yeah, grandma's. It's
Tyler's jumping in. He wants to know what our definition
of curriculum is. I don't like it. The whole, so Tyler's bringing in the American flavor, right?
Yes, Tyler's from Iowa.
So, yeah, see, the tell there is standards. And it's, I get it. This is the lingo. So our American teacher friends, yeah, the standards. What is your definition of curriculum? Is it the program you're teaching or the standards you're teaching? That changes a lot the definition. Yeah. I think for me, the curriculum is I love the have either one of you ever seen the image? It's an image, it's a story, an old wise fish swims past two young fish that are a little bit lower down in the water, and the wise fish kind of just over, if a fish has shoulders, the wise fish says to the two young fish, "Hey, young fish, how's the water down there?" And then as the two fish sort of swim away, one fish says to the other, "Who is that old fish?" And then the other young fish says to the other fish says, "What's water?" So I think, Tyler, that's what curriculum is. I think it's the thing that you can choose to notice or choose to exist in. And what makes you, what defines your choices is you're right. That changes a lot in the definition. I think that there's some jurisdictions and districts that make it really apparent that you are in water. Like, it's constantly reminding you of the environment that you're in. And in some ways, you know, you're fortunate if you're actually a fish in there, because that means you can survive in the actual environment. But I do know that there's other individuals, both teachers and students, that the actual environment that they're in as a, like, you can't escape it. You are going to be in there. That it's not hospitable. It's not the place where they're actually going to flourish. And I have countless students that are learning and probably developing their own personal, I always get caught up, curricula, curriculum, One's the single, one's the plural. I never get it. But they're developing their own standards that aren't recognized outside of that environment. Yet they're developing success. They're developing a pathway. They're building companies. They're making connections. They're doing school in their own way. And I've just been kind of, I guess, in this alt mode. Now, I get it. We can push back and say, okay, but this is the system that we have. And whether you're in Ontario, so we have ministry expectations, we're called, which then we sort of drive into these learning goals. What's fun? Here's the thing. I would be curious from Tyler's perspective. Our standards. Are they always called standards? Because in Ontario, we've actually done some work, and I don't know if other places have done this as well, to actually destigmatize and deregulate the ministry expectations, aka learning goals and success criteria. We've actually taken steps to take the technical out of what the ministry is telling us to do and make it into something that's understandable, not only for parents, for like basically non-edu celebs like ourselves, you know, Mr. Chidiac, right? So I think going back to Tyler's, you know, what is your definition of curriculum? I think the fact that the my definition is only as important as Chidiac's definition. And that I think what makes, you know, no more nor less valuable. Ultimately, I think that the professional judgment factor that we're in alignment somehow with standards or learning goals or success criteria is a fairly subjective. Yeah. So I think it's a fairly subjective practice. I'm imagining that there are some schools in some jurisdictions where there is somebody there with their checklist to make sure that that not only standards are operational, but they're done in a specific order and that the outcomes are clearly measurable. And I think that's the second part to curriculum is that for me, sometimes doing curriculum in the right way means that it's not clearly accessible or not easily accessible. So, and that's just, you know, the clever way or not so clever way is to say that the assessments are messy when the kids are actually doing what they need to do to learn. In the same way, if there's a student that's doing well, like one of the things one of the spaces that I fall into, and I never really come up for air, not well anyways, is if a student, and I'll hat tip to Stephen Hurley here, because I had a great conversation with him several years back about micro-credentialing. And one of the things we talked about was if a student has their national lifeguard, let's say their national lifeguard certification. Yeah. So they've done their life saving, they've done all that kind of stuff. Should they be able to get a half credit in phys ed and grade 9? So they're rolling in with a high level, or you know, you're a high performance athlete of any measure. If a student is a published author in grade 9, should they be able to get you know, their grade 9 English credit? So these are, I think this is one of, when we talk about standards and curriculum, that's the other spot. It's like the thought trap that I fall into. Because if the curriculum and the standards are meant to get a kid working towards a pathway of outcome, but the actual outcome and the summative task that they're doing only works in a classroom setting, then it's the wrong type of wrong type of outcome. Now, I guess someone could push back and say, yeah, but Cliff, it's a classroom. You can only do so much. Well, if we take it, you know, and maybe some curriculum is easier for others to do this, but if a student has a published book of poetry and they're already selling it on Amazon, have they already fulfilled the expectations of the course? And I like to circle that because I think when it comes to curriculum, unless curriculum sees that type of endeavor in the same way as an in-class assessment, because if a kid has a publisher, that publisher knows more about creating a book than I do as a teacher. Yet I, as the teacher, I'm trying to get the kid to write poetic forms, you know, figurative writing, metaphor, simile, enjambment. Like I'm trying to teach them about poetry. The kid has a published book. They published their book. They've sold the book. So what a rant. 34:54. Tyler lit me up. But I think where it gets tricky in sort of saying, you know, which is the driver. I think that's why I like saying, you know, curriculum's grandma that we're dropping off at the bingo. Because it's that's curriculum is only one of the purposeful drivers, I think, in learning. And the fact that we're sort of de-toothing it. That's bad. We're sort of destigmatizing it by talking about it in terms other than compliance terms. That it's ready for changing it up. Tyler, you're still out there? Did I put you to sleep? I put him to sleep. Tyler, actually, I'm assuming a him. Tyler's gone to reload Tyler's coffee.
Tyler's probably working out. And,
is that? Yeah?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I know Tyler typically works out in the mornings. I don't know if he's working out and listening to this. I don't know.
You said Idaho?
Idaho, yeah. Tyler cool. Tyler works at a school. Poor guy. He feels like, look at this. Look at what you've done to Tyler. He's like, no, I'm here. I'm just trying to feed my family. Come on, Clough.
Yeah, I know.
Don't be pushing people into compliance here on the Decoded Podcast. Tyler, I think Tyler, you're going to be mad at me, man. I should know this. But Tyler works at a school, I believe it's called Sherman Elementary.
It's on his YouTube.
The Sherman Gators. Yeah. And Tyler is like, I believe Tyler does, he's like not a tech teacher. Maybe he's the tech consultant or integration person at his school. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he does some fantastic stuff with tech and highlighting the amazing stuff that they do at Sherman. Really cool stuff that he does. So he's ed tech, social media. He's rolling in kind of the same circles as you and I in terms of our EDU interests. Gotcha. And great to be a gator. Look at this. Hashtag great to be a gator and technology integration coach. Okay, there. So, yeah, they have those in the States.
That's a hard hashtag to type. When you start mixing capitals in the middle, I'm betting Tyler has misspelled that a few times. Definitely misspelled that hashtag. Unless he's got the autofill option. He goes hashtag GRE and it autofills, so he can just load that up, right? That's awesome.
What's more awesome is he's probably got some amazing tweets out there that nobody has ever seen because they've been tagged as, you know, that misspelling great to be a gator. Aldo says Tyler has game.
Well, we're happy to raise Tyler's status to edu celeb right here. We're doing it. It's like Fortnite. You just got to buy the skin and away you go.
He's on the battle bus with us right now. So is Aldo.
This is the battle bus.
You know what's funny? Aldo is saying Tyler has game. If Tyler ever met Aldo, he'd be blown away.
Gather around. I got a story.
Aldo, listen, the other day I was out for my walk, and when I'm walking, I'm talking. And usually I'm talking to one of two people. It's either Joe Marquez or Chris Clough. And the other day I said this, right? Clough, I said, I'm going to turn into Aldo story time now. I'm going to tell you some stories. Mm-hmm. Literally was like, okay, story number one. Yeah, gather around. I learned from Aldo. So let's add some context here, okay? Yeah. So I know Tyler from the hashtag EdTech Army that Joe Marquez is putting together. So Tyler and I are connected through Joe Marquez, who's a California innovator. Central Valley, baby. Central Valley. So that's how I know TK. And he's been spending time with us here on Saturday mornings, the poor guy. And then Aldo. Aldo is an Ontario educator who is part of the Book Club for Men. And it's nice to have Aldo come and listen to us, and we bore him to death on Saturdays too. So some context of, you know, the peeps that hang out with us edu celebs, as Chris would say. Chris, can I shift gears a little bit? Is that okay with you if we shift?
Yeah. Yeah.
You said something to me this week that lit me up big time, like big time, in one of your messages to me, in one of your, I want to call it walk and talk, but I don't think you were walking when you were talking. In one of your walks and talks with me, you said something that totally lit me up. Oh, you were driving and talking. Driving and talking. But no, it was hands-free, bro.
It's come true. On. It's true. I hit record and then...
You hit record, you drive, and you talk. It's not a big deal.
Yep.
For all those cops listening, no, you...
We have diverse audience
members. It's not like he's not doing this.
Yeah.
You know, the phone is hooked up somewhere in the car and he's talking. But anyway.
You put that steering wheel really high.
It's a Fortnite.
How big's my car? That's how big's
it's the Fortnite big rig.
That's it with chonkers.
Okay, so.
Continue.
Okay, so I want to dig into what you said, but at some point we need to talk about my son chirping us last night when you and I were playing Fortnite. Mm-hmm. 10-year-old was right here over my shoulder, right where Yoda, baby Grogu, and he was chirping us. He's like, why are you guys, all you guys do is just get in the car and drive around. You guys are so like, he probably wanted to use some quality language, but he was like, you guys are just so lame. Like, you're just driving around. Because
what I love is I can hear him on your mic as we're playing, and he's just, it's nonstop. Nonstop. He's just like, why are you doing that? What's that thing? What are you doing? You guys are lazy. Wait, you just car? What is that? A Honda Civic? It was awesome. Like, and then the whole time you and I are like, hey, let's go grab a car. So he's sort of like talking about what we're doing, and you and I are like actually doing it. It's like, yeah, let's grab a car. Want to get in? Yeah, okay, come on, get in, man. Change the radio. This is a cool song. Yeah, keep playing that. What is this? I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, well, I guess we just talked about it. We don't need to do that again.
Here we go, dropping you, grandma at the bingo.
Yeah, you said something like, Roland, do you ever feel when you're unmotivated to do something that you eventually get sick and tired of being unmotivated, and then that kicks you into either your discipline kicks in and you start to do the thing that you've not been wanting to do. Mm-hmm. Or you just become motivated because you're so done with being unmotivated. And dude, it lit me up. It lit me up because 100% that happens to me. I end up in a situation where there's something that I need to do that I don't want to do. I feel no motivation to do it. And then I literally get sick and tired of being unmotivated to do it. And so I start to do it. I've been thinking about that ever since you said it. And it's funny too, because you're talking to me and you're like, does this ever happen to you? Like, you're literally wondering. And I'm sitting there, I'm looking at my phone. I'm like, dude, this is my life. This is my whole life. It just ends up happening. And when I come at, and I come at it 10 times harder and stronger when I've gone through that cycle of non-motivation. So perfect example, my report cards. I had nothing. There's no gas left in my tank. I honestly don't know how I'm still running. I really don't. There is no gas in the tank. And I'm like, report card time. You know, and it's like, and the first things I think about are the hours in front of me. Like, it's going to take hours. And some might argue it's not the time, it's the brain power that you need, right? Like, you're looking through your notes, you're looking at student products, and you're thinking about the student, and you're trying to, or at least I'm trying to weigh everything, and I'm trying to consider, and I have to say, I'm always kind of looking for the best possible scenario for each student. So I'm not looking to hammer them. I'm looking to build them up. And that can be hard sometimes, because sometimes the kids, they push you in a space where they're not doing anything. So it's like, well, you need to do something for me to build you up. Like, you can't have it all. So it takes a lot of brain power. And I'm like, I don't feel like I have the energy to enter into it. So, and it's still pretty early, but I like to start my report cards early, because it's that old car that your dad gave you to drive when you're 16, but it's a junker. And you know that once you get it started, you got to let it warm up a bit. And then when you hit the gas, it's ready to go. But that whole starting process takes time. That's me with the report cards right now. It's like I got to get the motor started so that things are humming, things are warming up, loosening up, and it's ready to rock and roll. And after you said what you said, and I considered it and reflected on it, I started the engine, and it's warmed up, and I'm ready to go now. And now I'm in full blast, like I'm just in. And I gotta get them done before that engine shuts off or I'm in trouble. So 100%, I think that happens to me. And I even tweeted out about it. It's like, it's exactly what I said. I get sick and tired of being sick and tired. And so you move into action. But man, that startup, there's a cost, a huge cost there. Now, I know it's my job to do report cards. So I don't think, I'm not complaining about doing my job. My issue is, and I've said this to you, report cards can be difficult under regular circumstances. Under the pandemic circumstances, and I've said this to anybody who listened to me, there's a lot of talk about positive mental health. Everybody's got this, hashtag you got this. Everything's hunky-dory because we're all in this together, hashtag we're in this together. But nobody's taken anything off our plate around assessment and evaluation. We're still in Ontario. Every teacher, as far as I know, there's only one thing I know that I've been told not to do. I've been instructed not to report on social emotional learning in mathematics. I've been told you are not reporting that. And I remember reading the reasons why, but I'm like, well, I don't really care why. I've been told not to do it, so I'm not doing it. Other than that, nobody said anything about the curriculum, the standards, none of it. It's like, yeah, we're in a pandemic. Wi-Fi's wonky. Equity's all over the place. Kids aren't going to class. But you are still going to assess them and evaluate them exactly how learning success tells you to do so. Don't change anything.
Growing success.
Oh, sorry. Learning success.
No, just in case, you know, because we know we have the scholars out there, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Growing success is the name of the document. My apologies for getting it wrong.
Sorry, scholars.
Yeah, because they're all listening right now and they're making comments right now.
I believe it's called fact checking.
So anyway, long story short, there's a fossil word for you, fossil phrase. Long story short,
yeah,
it's been harder for me to kickstart that engine. But I am tired of being unmotivated to do it. So I've entered in. And that happens with everything, right? For me, that happens with everything that I'm not passionate about, that I'm not ready to jump into. But sometimes that kick in the pants is needed for me. And that was a really cool moment for me when I realized that it's not a bad thing for me to be unmotivated to do something. It's not bad. It's part of the process for me. Eventually, if it needs to be done with work, I need to write report cards, and it'll happen. That circle will come around, and it'll get kickstarted. And then if it's for other things that I don't need to do, then it just won't happen, right? Like, it just won't happen.
Did I give you any of the backgrounder to that as to how I sort of noticed that in my thinking? Did I ever mention it?
I don't think so.
So the way that it sort of came to me was because I was talking with a student who was telling me about their telling me about the
work. They owed a bunch of work. They owed a ton of work. And they were talking about this all-nighter that they pulled to get the work done. And they were pretty proud of themselves for pulling the all-nighter. And so this is a student that I've just gotten to know this semester. They were not a part of my caseload in the first part of this. So anyone jumping in, I'm a special education resource teacher or CERT. So I have high school levels. So I have students that I've been working with the whole school year, but I had some that were added in just because of staffing switch up. So my caseload changed in the second semester. So the student was telling me about how late they had stayed up in order to get some work done. And as I'm listening to them, I'm starting to get this sort of like sense of how the kid operates. So I asked them, I'm like, just 1 second. Jimmy, we've met Jimmy before. I said, Jimmy, like, tell me, is this kind of you normally? As in, you sort of need to be sort of on fire with due dates in order to kind of launch into work. And Jimmy says, yeah, and I've kind of accepted that. It's the calendar. It doesn't matter if I put it in a calendar. It doesn't matter if I get, it doesn't matter if I have reminders. Jimmy's looking for a physiological stress response, that failure is imminent, and there's no reminder that a teacher or a parent can give Jimmy to light them up to do their work. It's not happening. Jimmy's not reacting to the world that way. And it got me thinking about my own process. It got me thinking about how I pay attention to my deadlines and how I pay attention, I guess you could say, like, to my own wellness and what I actually need to feel in order for my deadlines to mean something to me. And I really love what you kind of said, that you recognize a process in there, because this process is not generally recognizable as reasonable just in general, right? Because if you talk to any teacher that is demonstrating their organizational capacities, they're not bragging about leaving stuff to the last minute. Like, they're not saying like, oh yeah, I don't worry about it, cause I know I'm going to kick in. I know that I'm going to kick in and it's going to happen. But this kid really got me thinking about that. Like, this is a thing. And I think in some ways, this is a thing that you've identified as well. Like, there has to be, you know, it's there, you know, you got your kick, it's going to come in, but you have to feel that in order to access it. It's like that moment, you know, that animated moment from movies, where the nitro injector is launched. And every single time they show that, they typically don't just show the person pushing the button and then the car going fast. They always show the reaction, which tends to be, it goes way all the way down to the engine, electric, and then all of a sudden the car just launches and gets going. They need to have that moment in between of reactivity. And I think that's what I've come to appreciate as well, not only in my students, that many of them are triggered into action through that reactivity model. Now, I think there's a really deep, when you talk about wellness, I think there's a deep problem with this, because I do think that constant, so that whole reaction thing, you know, the fast and the furious kind of a moment, there's a cost to that. There's a cost to that I think, you know, existing at that stress level, I think there's a cost to it. And I also think that it kind of, if that's your tool, like if that's the tool you need to notice that it's time to kick in, that can be problematic. It can be problematic because it's also like, if it doesn't kick in time, like there's a lot of different kind of layers to that. Like if it just doesn't kick in time, or it's causing you, you know, stress and anxiety, then that's a problem, because you're basically in some ways admitting that in order for you to get your stuff done, you have to feel that undue level of stress and anxiety. And I will say for me, I do. It's like I'm waiting for that. I don't know how that sounds on your end, but it makes, I'm thinking like electrical current. I think that if that's what it's going to take for me to light up and get stuff done, and I did stuff similar like that in my PQP. I did, when I sort of, I got behind 1 week and there was something in my brain that was saying, don't worry, Clef, it'll kick in. And it did. I didn't actually do anything. It just kicked in. There was something in the stress that hit the nitro button and I launched into action. So, yeah.
Can we capitalize on the nitro button? Can we bring that into empathy engines?
Empathy engines, maybe do it.
I don't know what to do with it, but I like it. The nitro button.
Okay. You're just suggesting like that needs to be a...
I'm just thinking we could do something with that.
Well, the problem, it's not the problem. Maybe the challenge that you and I haven't talked about is that we have, so empathy engines has only been up to this point, wearables, right?
Yep.
We haven't actually talked about wetware. Wetware? Yeah. Are you familiar with that?
I suspect it has something to do with something you wear in the water.
No, it's not. It's not actually, it's not water-based. What wetware is where you patch directly into some, like your inside your body. So you might have something that's kind of connected here, but in order for it to fully, to not just be responsive to your biometrics, you want it to actually activate biometrics, it would have to be patched in somewhere. So then you're getting into more of like cyborg. It's our cyborg division. Oh. That's highly, highly, highly controversial and also really super. Yeah.
Well, we've talked about that, right? I think I've said on the podcast over the last four seasons that I'd be willing. Well, I got the COVID vaccine, so I guess I already have a chip inside of me, right? Mm-hmm. Can we use that now to have some interaction between the outside wearables and the inside stuff?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. That is the thing. So if you really like to have the nitro injector, in order to fully access the nitro injector, we would actually need something in us that was giving us nitro, right?
Right. And I'm sure we've got lots of chemicals inside of us that do that.
But to actually have access like to
hit
it,
the button, hit the point inside that actually activates that.
Yeah. So you would need something.
You're sick, Clef. We're playing like this is very controversial.
This is controversial. We're
thank God our 50,000 listeners aren't here right now.
They're busy.
It's Saturday morning. They're all outside cutting the grass. Did you know, here are the benefits. I'm totally shifting. Here are the benefits of having, I have a push mower, and I was cutting my grass like at 7:30 in the morning. It was awesome. So now my grass is cut and ready to rock the day away. And my neighbors are going to wake up. They're going to look outside. They're going to be like, man, Roland cut his grass already.
You know what's awesome?
I love it. What's awesome, Clef?
I don't cut my grass often.
You just let it grow like crazy?
Not like crazy, but I'm not the guy on my street. I'm not the guy that's on my street getting up at 7:30 to mow my lawn because I feel like I have to.
Well, I'm not that guy either.
You just said you're the guy.
No, dude, I'm not purposely up at 7:30 to mow my lawn. I was up.
Oh, gotcha.
And I'm like, well, I got to do something before I do the podcast. What do I have time to do? It's like, oh, cut the front lawn. It's not like I woke up and I'm like, I can't wait to get out there. I'm just glad I was able to do it so early because now I don't have to do it later. I don't have to do it today anymore. It's done. And the
so push you, mower, you have, you have, quiet. you have a, is it a, is that, cause I figured most, like I have a push mower too, but it's got an engine on it.
Sorry. What do you call, people call it a push mower because I have to push it.
I don't know.
Oh, I don't either. Let's see.
I have to push mine too, but it's got a gas engine on it.
See, I don't have to push mine because the gas engine on my gas engine one, I just press a button, the nitro button, and it pushes itself. It's nice. True. So what do you call a lawnmower with no engine?
Scissors? Clippers? I feel like there's a joke in there somewhere.
No motor. You call those eco-friendly push reel lawnmower. It's called a push mower, a push reel lawnmower. That's what they keep calling it here on the internet. So
real,
I'm good,
as in double E, real, yeah. Or real,
real as in double E.
A real mower. Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I have. I have a real mower and I have a lawn mower with an engine and a nitro button so that when I press the button, it propels itself. I just go along for the ride. And I use that when I get into my clough mode and I don't cut for a long time, the real mower can't handle really, really long grass.
Yep.
So then I got to bring out the big guns. And you know what?
You're like a hybrid. You're a hybrid lawn maintenance kind of a person. Yeah, hybrid.
Well, it's not the fact that I have a push reel, as Aldo probably has a story that goes with this, a push reel. I have a push reel mower. And when I bought it, because when we bought the house that we live in now, I don't have a big front or backyard. And my gas mower is a beast. And so it's just to navigate it. And I can't even get it in the backyard because we're on like a slope. And the sides of my house, we don't have grass on the sides of the house. We have stone. So I had to get something to be able to carry it to the back. So we got this push reel mower. And now it's funny. I actually feel good about not polluting the earth. There's something about starting up the gas mower that is within my DNA. There's something there that says this is awesome. The smell of the fuel. The sound, the blaring, deafening sound. There's a lot of stuff going on there. The nitro button that I get to press to propel this thing. I don't have that. The push reel, I'm the nitro. And if I'm not feeling it, then we got a problem. But I mean, one of the benefits, and it's funny too, because when I first got it and I was outside and there's about three guys on the street that the four of us, we really take care of our lawn. Like when you drive down the street, there are no dandelions on my lawn or theirs. And people are like, what's going on over there? We're very serious about our lawn. And when they saw me with this thing, they were looking at me like, dude, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm cutting the grass. They're like, with that thing? And I've seen great benefits from using that thing. It's quiet. It's not polluting the earth. It's not getting me high on the fumes. Mm-hmm. I'm not wrecking my hearing. I can cut the grass whenever I want because there's no noise pollution. And it's really cool the way it cuts the blades of grass and then throws them right back into the lawn. So it's like some good stuff there. For a big lawn, I would not recommend. Like for your house, I wouldn't recommend it. You'd be cutting for days. I mean, unless you want your son or daughter to start going out there and doing it.
Oh, definitely. They're going to be starting soon.
Here's the problem at my house. I remember last summer my wife said, okay, our oldest needs to go out and cut the grass. And I'm like, She's like, listen, you can't be anal retentive about everything. So I showed him how to cut the grass the way that I like it cut. And then every now and again, last summer, he'd say, hey, can I get some V-Bucks for Fortnite? I'm like, you know what to do, bro. You want to earn some money? Let's see it happen. So he's out there cutting with the real mower. No, the funniest thing ever, watching last year, he was 13, watching a 13 or 14 year old cut the lawn with a push reel and have no motivation. It's actually pretty funny. I think I should probably take video and like meme it up or something because it's a sight. That's for sure. So I don't know why we got into the push reel, but,
I can launch off it if you want.
Launch,
and this will be bittersweet. So today, well, no, it is. Here's the deal. And I'm gonna throw a hat tip out to Rupa. Rupa has a rad Rupa. She's been posting up this week pictures of her dad and her dad. Her dad passed. I can't remember how long ago. I think maybe 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Today's my dad's birthday. So he good. He I guess he is 76 years old. He died. This would be 6 years ago. He died. He would be 76 today. And what I love about this conversation, because if we got to circle back at least to dad style for a little bit, is that so Rupa's posting up pictures of her dad. It's classic. You got to find it. And I encourage anyone to go look, check out her feed, pictures of her dad, baseball cap kind of sitting high on the head, golf shirt, slacks. I think the dude, I don't remember the footwear, but you see a picnic table there. You got the propane barbecue. Everything, you see the lawn, the cut lawn in the background, the patio, the fence. Like, it's just, it's like the dad style t-shirt. It is the dad's. And also, just to throw in a plug, the whole, you know, our dad shoes project that I kind of, you know, I pushed a bit. We'll see if anybody wants to share some stories this year. It was almost like, what was funny was that I was thinking, like, how do I kind of encourage people to talk about their dads and sort of get them to tell stories? And then I came across Rupa's feed and I'm like, it's so cool. She's been talking about that space for a little while now. Like, she, you know, how much she misses her dad and just what she's learned from her dad. And she attributes, you know, his activism as lighting a fire in her activism. So it's awesome. It was just kind of cool how the universe puts, you know, a post-it note on you and say, here's something for you to think about. And when you're talking about the whole mowing the lawn thing, and I think back, oh God, this is messy, but it's kind of cool. You remember me posting up about the dad details when I was doing the snow blowing? So this was like that, the random thoughts that occur when your brain can kind of, when you're more in the discipline than a motivation. So I'm out doing the driveway with the snowblower, it doesn't matter, shovel or snowblower. And I'm trying to get like these crisp edges as I'm clearing so that the snow doesn't fall back on the driveway. Totally ridiculous dad details. But I think you're lighting up the dad details here perfectly, because you said the words, you know, you're cool with him doing it, but you want it done the way that you want it done. And there's value. On one hand, I'm like, come on, the kids mowing the lawn, that's fantastic. But I totally have it. I can remember being out there with my kids, we're shoveling the driveway. I'm like, throw it up higher and make sure it doesn't fall back down on the driveway, right? Like, we're trying to get like these lines to maximize the actual vehicle space that we need in the driveway. And then I'm not going to go back out and start sweeping it up and getting it off and completely, you know, ignoring the fact that it's probably going to snow that night as well. So what the hell am I doing, you know, out there doing that now? So that's what you had me kind of lit up about as you're talking about, you know, you'd appreciate if your son played a little bit more active role in doing the lawn, but it's got to be done the way that dad wants it done. Like, that's the dark side of dad details. And I think all of our, that's even what people say, eh? Like, that when I think that probably the spouse is sort of looking at the apprentice doing the lawn, and that's like playing out over the, oh, they better do it the way dad wants it done, which is, it's that, it's ominous, but it's just a kind of like a, that's the apprenticeship, right? That's the apprenticeship process.
So I found that picture that you're talking about. I think it's Rupa's dad. He's at the barbecue. The barbecue lid's open. He's holding tongs. He's looking like he's going to be flipping the meat.
How good is it? Like, it's, well,
that is
classic that dad.
Ethnic dad 101. The sandals.
Is it sandals? I couldn't remember the footwear.
He's wearing sandals. It's hilarious because he's got khakis on and a golf shirt now and a hat. But my dad, picture this. This is my dad. The barbecue even looks like the same barbecue we had. The beer is hilarious because it looks like a
Molson. I forgot about export. The beer. Yeah, export, like a Molson Canadian.
Or a 50. It's something. It's old school Molson. There's something going on there. It looks to me like there's a Frisbee on the lawn, or it's a lawnmower. Sorry. My God, I'm lost. It's a sprinkler of some type, perhaps, because I see, if you look carefully, you can see the hose. There's a hose in the grass. But anyway, that's my dad, but my dad wearing shorts and a white undershirt. I don't know what to call it, with no sleeves though, with just the shoulder straps.
That's an undershirt. The other ones would just be a t-shirt, but it's sort of like
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my dad, and
like tank top.
It's a tank top. Like a tank top undershirt. But my buddies, they would, and we would. My dad wouldn't be in the backyard. He'd be in right outside the like. So we had our barbecue in the garage. So we'd open the garage door, bring the barbecue out. My buddies, when they drive past, they would. Now they were making fun of my dad, but I just laughed. Like they're like you're. They would call it, but my dad's name was Tony, and they would call it the Tony barbecue accessories.
Yeah.
You'd have to wear the undershirt, but they called it, a pre-stained undershirt because it was like an older shirt. So it wasn't white anymore.
Yeah.
They called it pre-stained. So you'd have to have the pre-stained undershirt. The old school, like running shorts that were really, really short.
Yeah, the old Adidas.
But my dad never ran a day in his life.
Yeah.
And then he's got these sandals, these old school ethnic sandals. Anyway, that picture takes me right back to the 80s and my dad barbecuing. That's a good one. And happy birthday to your dad, Clough. Happy birthday.
I know.
Are you going to have a burger in his honor today?
You know it, right? Yeah. And I've messaged you about this before. The family, we go out for burgers. Yeah, that was something that my dad and I would often do. I'd sort of show up in Oshawa and be like, hey, let's go grab a burger. The picture, just to do one more sort of light landing on the picture that Rupa put up. My mom's side of the family is Polish, and my grandfather often, that outfit that Rupa's dad is wearing, my grandfather would be wearing something very similar, but the pants and the colors too, that was the other thing too. The same colored pants, but they would be shorts. So they'd be dress shorts. He'd be wearing some dress shorts. And the shirt, instead of the golf shirt, or sort of like kind of like that dressy golf shirt, he'd be wearing a full-on dress shirt with the sleeves rolled up and the buttons unbuttoned down to about the belly button. Like that was his summer wear. Usually socks and then slip-on loafers, like leather bottom shoes. And I can't tell you, and his backyard would be about the size of, because he owned, it was a semi-detached house and he owned both sides of it. Wow. And he rented the other half out. But the back property was easily 10 tennis courts, like just side, like it was a lot of property in the back. He had his garden and he had his work shed where he did his upholstery. He had a massive bit of property in the back. And not only that, it was the backyard fell away at about a 45 degree angle. So he'd be out in the backyard walking across, mowing at an angle like this, but he's sort of going across and he, like you, he didn't have the push mower. He did have a gas mower, which won't even talk about today, but this gas mower was like something he built. It was like, and he cobbled together. So the thing was like dangerous. It was dangerous to start, dangerous to push, dangerous to turn off, because the only way you could is he had to go in and he would pull the spark plug out of it. So he popped the spark plug and then he would pull something else out of it that killed the engine. So he's actually putting his hand into like the to turn it off. The guy was a rogue. But as he's mowing the lawn, he also was a 7:30 a.m. mower. But he's got this thing that sounds is a howitzer a tank? It sounded like a tank.
No, a howitzer is a gun.
Okay, so whatever the tank, the equivalent, but a very, very loud. A Sherman, that's it. So it sounds like a Sherman rolling through the backyard. And not only that, when you looked at the lawn, like his dad details, because he was wearing 7:30 a.m., leather flat bottom shoes, do not grip dewy grass. So, you know, there's a couple of times where I'd sort of come out in the morning with some orange juice or some cherry juice, whatever they had in the fridge. I would see him like, just like, and then correcting. Here's the thing though. The lines on the mower were straight as hell. They went straight across the hill. 90 degrees, come straight across the hill. But you could see in the dewy grass behind these curves where his feet had slipped. And I have no doubt he was a proud man. His name's Johnny. That's my middle name. John, Jan, J-A-N. I have no doubt that every time he sort of had slipped and took a knee, he did a quick look around and just popped up and he made sure that he was all good, right? And he just kept on going. Yeah. The leather that backyard was a beast. A beast. Cigarette hang.
Yeah, the cigarette.
Cigarette in the hand that he's reaching in, like holding the smoke, and he's reaching into the engine like to turn it off. Yeah, and you're and at the time I'm just like, at the time I'm thinking to myself, like he's gonna ruin his cigarette by doing that. And sometimes it come out and you can see the cigarette's like broken. Mm-hmm. He's like holding it to smoke it, just to keep his fingers around it to sort of smoke it down to the end. Oh my gosh.
So many John. Great memories of seeing, like, I didn't get any dad details from my dad when it came to cutting the grass or shoveling the driveway.
Me neither.
I didn't get any, like, I don't even remember my dad ever shoveling the driveway. I think I always did it. My dad did mow the lawn, but then I took over at one point. He never did it again because I was doing it. I had those details built into me as a kid. Probably because I felt I had no control in the house. So where did I exert my control? My control was exerted, you know, as I was doing the driveway or cutting the lawn. Those were the places where I could do what I wanted to do for me, I guess. Aldo's calling you Clough the Storyteller. We learn from the best, Aldo. We learn from the best.
Aldo's got to know, though. Aldo's got to appreciate that, Aldo, from one to the other. But that's how this stuff comes out, right? It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much. You don't even realize the fortification around these stories, especially, let's say, around our dads. And you get just the right formulation of provocation. Like Rupa's picture of dad dude out on... Like, and I don't even know when that photo was taken, but it is, that image is locked. Even the color of the fence, which I think is kind of like a reddish brown. Mm-hmm. I'm going by memory here. I'm not looking at the photo. Tell me with the color of the fence in the background.
It is brownish, like it's a brown, but there's some red to it.
Yeah, like that is so, like you don't see fences colored, painted that color anymore. But often like that was like 70s. Like early 80s, that's the stain everyone was getting. Redwood colored stain, whatever that is. You're dropping that on the thing. So I love when I saw that picture, and I gotta send a note to her now just for, you know, feeding the memories this way. I looked at him like, my God, like, can you see the details on the hat? The baseball cap?
I'm not looking at the picture anymore, but yeah, I mean, dude, something we didn't touch upon is the watch. He's wearing like a dress watch.
Yes.
The dude is cooking barbecue and he's dressed really well in my opinion, I don't know. There's something about the contrast between the trucker hat and this trucker hat and sandals with the pants, the watch and the shirt. And maybe I'm reading into this. Well, what I'm doing is we are reading.
We're decoding here. We're decoding.
I'm projecting my world onto that picture, and he's looking at the photographer like, "What are you taking my picture for?" Take a hike. I'm trying to cook here. The only thing that would make that picture more epic for me is if the dad had a ciggy in the other hand. So in one hand are the tongs, the other hand's a ciggy, and he's looking at the picture, the photographer like. Like somebody saying to him, "Hey, Dad, look over here. I'm going to take a picture of you." And he's like, "What are you doing? Like, I'm cooking, you know? Like, take a hike. I'm cooking my chicken." And he's got the ciggy. Like, man, that brings – it takes me right – I can smell it. I can smell the
charcoal. Oh, my God. I didn't even – I'm looking at the picture now.
Yeah.
Those tongs, because I can remember this happening so many times. Like, those are not – but this is, again, this is how my grandfather would have worked. Mm-hmm. This is how my dad would have worked a little bit. Like – those are literally the most dangerous type of barbecue tongs to use, right? Like they're just, look how, like your hand has to get so close to the barbecue. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That style doesn't care though. That no. style doesn't care. You're getting in there. It's classic. Yeah, the dress watch, man.
The dress watch.
Man, like it's just, there's so much perfection in this. And I love the capture of the smoke. Like even their smoke, like it's just.
Look at how small the barbecue is. The tank is bigger than the barbecue.
It is. It is.
That's old school.
It's perspective. It's a little bit of the way the perspective is playing, but yeah.
You know what I mean. It's not like the dad bought a friggin' $10,000 Broil King. He went to the store, he got a barbecue, got the tank, and he's cooking food. Like, there was no...
Feeding the family. Feeding the family.
There's no, like... Well, you should have seen what I just did to my barbecue, right? Like, I literally gutted it and redid my barbecue, and now it's a beaut, but that wasn't going to happen then, right? They just bought it. They used it. They tossed it. That picture, I'm glad that you took me there because, man, I can feel that picture in my bones, right? Like, that's my dad. That's my dad barbecuing. So,
yep.
And not just dad barbecuing. For me, it's ethnic dad barbecuing. There's something for me there that goes a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
It goes a little bit deeper because that chicken to me is not just friggin' regular chicken with salt and pepper on it. There's friggin' all kinds of, Middle Eastern spices on my chicken. It's not the chicken that's being cooked next door at Jimmy's house.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's being done old world style in the new world. So, yeah, it's whacked out. It's good times though.
It's awesome, eh? Like I said, I'm gonna make sure I throw some props Rupa's way because that's some good feels. That's some good feels. Me thinking about like how that connects at a deep level for me. And you know, it's interesting. It's funny how for me, I'm kind of skipping over memories of my own dad and jumping to my grandfather. Like that's where it kind of puts me. It puts me more thinking about my grandfather.
Oh, interesting.
And
see, I never know my grandparents, so.
Yeah. And part of it is it's got me thinking about my grandfather, but also thinking about how little I knew about my grandfather. Like that's part of what comes out of this. It's the not knowing as much about him or knowing him as deeply as I wish to now. Right. So everything now becomes a little bit of an imagined relationship when I'm trying to think of what I know about him. And because I can't even tell you right now how old I was when he died. I think I was maybe 14 when my grandfather died. So I'm in my teenage year. So I have memories and stuff like that. And I've written about what I imagine kind of happened when I was growing up in that yard and that backyard and that space. And whether or not it's like the Jesse Thistle book, just the way that he's recounting the stories, he's recounting it sort of in a way that's important to him. And so that's how I'm kind of playing with memory here. I'm sort of pulling the stuff that's important to me now and that I feel I can sort of gather some understanding of my family from. So props to you, Rupa. I think you lit up a couple dads here this morning.
I'm looking at the picture again and I'm like, this is dope. If you look at the paint on the picnic table, the seat part, it's like immaculate. The grass is cut. It's like Rupa's dad had it going on. I mean, if I'm assuming he took care of those things, maybe the picnic table's brand new, but it's like, this is his space. He's making sure it's legit, you know? It's a good photo, man. You're right. Everything about it brings me right back. Holy cow.
It's a high tech. That's interesting. It's kind of the we're totally doing like media deconstruction here, eh? But that, the actual picnic table, like I can remember seeing that style of picnic table. Like my grandfather, my grandparents had one of the wooden ones. Mm-hmm. And I always thought to myself, like that picnic table to me was like the premium picnic table, because that was the one that I would see at near my house. There's a, not near my house, in my hometown, Oshawa, there's a Lakeview Park, and it's a massive park space where GM would have their staff picnics. There's cultural events, large festivals would be in this park. It's just a massive space right in the south end of Oshawa. It's a beautiful space. But they had those types of picnic tables that I think the resiliency factor of those picnic tables was higher because you could replace the boards. Mm-hmm. So the picnic table my grandfather, they had in the backyard, like it was a death trap. And I know this because I used to like to jump up on it, right? And then the whole tabletop kind of goes wonky because the carriage bolts that are holding the wood together are kind of worn out or the wood's rotting. And the thing was covered in like 22 coats, not of stain, but like this high density paint. And so it was just kind of like the paint that was holding it together. But I look at the one that's in that backyard there, and I think that's an investment in something that can be fixed, replaced. And the fact that it has prominence, you know, on that little patio spot. Mm.
That's a big deal.
It is. I think it is. I look at that. To me, that looks, and I look, go back on my, you know, my kid memory. That would be like the premium one. In the same way, I'd be at the park and I'd be looking at the swings in the park. And I'd be saying to myself, why can't I have swings like this in my backyard? We just have the crappy little, you know, the ones that shift on your right. weight all the time. I want one of those ones that look at their concrete. That's why they got concrete in the ground. That's what holds. So that's why I'm looking at this picnic table in the back.
My dad wasn't a big beer drinker, though. My dad would have had hard liquor. So replace the beer bottle with a tumbler mm-hmm. and some scotch or some arak.
What's that?
Middle Eastern booze. It tastes like black licorice.
Oh, okay. Like aniseed.
It's probably Armenian, but it was hardcore stuff. I remember when I was allowed to drink and I had some, I was like, I remember doing like googly eyes. I'm talking like I'm 19, 20 years old. I'm all googly eyes and I'm looking at my family. I'm like, you guys are nuts. You drink this stuff for fun? And they're like, put more water in it. I'm like, I'm not drinking this stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's my dad. He would have had a tumbler with that stuff on the rocks. And you're supposed to, culturally, I've seen my family and extended family mix it with water. Mm-hmm. My dad puts like this much of it in and then like the tiniest little bit of water to say he put water in it mm-hmm. so that my mm-hmm. mom doesn't lose her mind. And just even that whole thing, like, hey, don't put a lot of water in it. That's my drink kind of thing. And just watching the interaction between the two. Oh, I don't think my kids have any of that with me. I don't think my kids have any of that with me. I think when they see me outside cutting the grass, they're not like dad. They're like, dad's nuts. Is dad out there again? What's dad but
kids,
doing now?
Kids don't get that. This is something that we've identified. This is the silliness. This is the silliness that we now, with memory, with learning, with, you know, the mistakes we've made of becoming fathers, the assumptions, the no guidebook, the you and I talking, and then just sort of, you know, cleverly coming up with the dad details. I wouldn't have noticed that either. Like, I wouldn't have sort of...
Our kids will notice it when they're our age looking back?
Hopefully before we're gone, right? Like yeah. Because for me, a lot of this stuff, like and it's not something that you can sort of say, here you go, kids. Here's why I do these things. It goes back to the sneaking in the vegetables where we started with the conversation. The more I tell a kid, a student, that they need to have an organizational method for learning, often the farther they move from wanting to sort of accept that into their operating system. Mm-hmm. So I know it. I'm explaining to, you know, I'll explain to my kids, like, okay, when you leave the kitchen, check the counter there, because there's often recycling that. When you leave the kitchen, you're walking past the garage door. You can put the recycling in there in that one step.
Right.
And they don't see that as important. They're like, I'll just walk back and get it. I'm sort of thinking, yeah, but you're going to take, like, somehow this is going to impact your life if you don't start doing this a good way. If you don't, really, it's not true. Because the fact of it is that my dad probably, and I don't have a specific memory, probably would have sort of suggested to me, you know what, Clough, probably a better way to do this, a little bit more efficient. I'm like, sure, Dad, if I was worried about efficiency, but I'm not. I got all the time in the world. And that's where we circle back to this idea of mortality, right? It isn't right. until you start to look at, I think, how you move through the world, as you and I do, and sort of think about the impact on the world and our kids, as you and I do, and want that impact to be noticed in a welcoming way, not just as crazy Dad or crazy Clough, crazy Roland. But you can't force that.
No.
You can't force that. Yeah. And that's what you just did there. I don't know if Aldo's still listening. Probably not. He's gone off. He's done. He's like, I got to go to my day.
But no real shopping for the weekend or whatever.
Yeah. But this is where you just kind of, you end on a sigh. That's it. You just end on the sigh because there's no way to force these stories into kids' heads. Cause my grandfather wasn't performing as he was putting, you know, doing the backyard. As he probably had his, I think he was Ryan Coke or Ryan, I think he was Ryan Ginger. His Ryan Ginger, you know, just kind of, he's cutting strawberries. Nice. So as my grandfather's Ryan Ginger was probably sweating on the little table that was on their teeny tiny patio, you know, 7:30, 8:30 in the morning on a Saturday mowing the lawn. Like he wasn't doing this to demonstrate that he was doing something in the world.
Right, right.
He was just being in the world.
Yeah.
He was being in the world.
That's a very interesting, what you just said is 100% correct. As I'm living my life, I'm not thinking this is a moment for my kids to see or remember. I'm not. When I talk to you right now, I am wondering though, if they see anything I do at the moment and have any awareness of what we're kind of experiencing, probably not though. Probably not. It's really interesting though. Hopefully I'm still around when if they're having these kinds of conversations and then saying to me, hey, you remember when you were doing this type of thing all the time? Like, I don't know. I wonder, and the whole thing is kind of messed when you think about it, because
it is most, and it's whole, this is like, you're hitting some big emotions now, right? Like you're kind of creeping up to that space of go, you go, I'll get choked. You do yours.
It's messed because is it universal? Here are my questions. Is it universal? Do these things happen to all kids that become our age and look back on our dads and remember these cool things about our dad that now would be totally like dangerous or like just not permitted or frowned upon? Like, I'm not living the same life my dad lived, right? Like I'm living a life of privilege. My dad didn't have privilege. Like my dad was blue collar. He had no choice. I don't think he wanted to be, but that's what he was. And he was in and out of the house all the time. Like that's not the life I'm living. My life that I'm living is completely different than how my dad lived. And I wonder if that's a factor. I don't know. Like, you know, it's just the whole thing's messed up. Even to think about it is hard because it's really funny. I'm not living the same life he lived. My kids are not growing up like I grew up. They don't know any different. Like, so I can't even, and I've dealt with this conflict for years. It took me years to understand that this whole idea of how I grew up and what made me and appreciate, you know, work ethic and motivation and discipline, they don't get it because they didn't grow up like me. And I've tried to instill some of that in them, but it's hard when you're not struggling. When there's no struggle, it's hard to understand sometimes the feelings that come with the struggle that do something in your brain that make you think you don't want to live like this. Like, you don't want to live a life of struggle. You want to do everything you can to try to live a better life with less struggle, even though it is the struggle, I believe, that builds the character, and the struggle that gives you the fuel to be more disciplined. And then some would argue that it just looks different for my kids than it did for me. But my kids are living a pretty, a much easier life than what I lived. Whether they get that or not, whether anybody can understand that or not, my perspective is they did. My dad didn't do stuff for me that I do for my kids. And the reason why I do it for my kids is because he didn't do it for me.
Right.
Just whacked. And they're probably thinking that I'm deficient in 100 different ways, which I probably am. But dude, I just think about, like, when I was a kid, my dad wasn't around. My dad was at work. My dad would come home. We didn't eat together as a family. We didn't eat together. Special occasions we did. But like dinner was when dinner was ready. My mom would say, here's the dinner. Here in my house, it's like, we eat together 95% of the time. Here's dinner. Sit down. Get your rear end over here. Put that down. Turn off the television. We're eating dinner as a family. This is something that is like a good example of that's just built into the culture of our family here today, the way it works. Mm-hmm. You know, when COVID wasn't around and William, my youngest, had hockey like 4 out of 7 nights of the week, like my wife was freaking out. Like, we're not eating together. You guys are never home. And I'm like, I lean on my child and I'm like, well, too bad. The kid has hockey. So he's going to go to hockey. We'll eat when we get home. You and Ben eat when you two are together. She doesn't like that. And it's not ideal, but that's life. And I'm thinking, I'm happy my kid can play hockey at that level. I'm happy that we can afford to give him that. Right? Because like, I wasn't playing hockey at that level. Whatever right. I had, I had. So it's like, for me, I see it as, yeah, we're losing out on here, but the kid's gaining something here. But she didn't grow up like me. She grew up like my kids are growing up now. So again, it's perspective and experience. But I'm just like, no, that's fine. Then we're not eating together. Like, I didn't eat with my family and I survived. So the fact that we 95% of the time eat together is like, it's
awesome.
It's 90, you know, it's like 90% more time than I spent with my family at dinner. So for me, it's like overwhelming. For her, it's not normal. It's all perspective, and you can't give somebody that.
And again, yeah, the performance is not what's happening. It's the living your life. Tyler circled back and just mentioned that he's teaching his kid how to cook breakfast. So, mentioning,
yeah, life and skills. I, you know, I'm bothered I never got to this, but Tyler also said that he was going to work out after, or he was going to work out after the whole breakfast thing, and then it was his 149th day in a row of working out. So good on you, Tyler. I'm one of his cheerleaders. I cheerlead Tyler on. He's a good dude. He's working hard. He's trying to be a good person, you know? There's nothing wrong with that. That's it for today? A carrot? I thought you would have drawn a circus over there. Tell me about the carrot, Chris.
I don't know. Just thinking about motivation, discipline.
Ah, the carrot. Interesting. Motivation, discipline.
Yeah, that's what I thought of.
Wow. Well, thanks for that. This is good. I don't have to go cut the grass now because it's done.
And I'm not going to bother. So this is good. It's kind of
you done. Don't care about your grass. Mine's cut. And trust me, bro, I don't wake up at 7:30 on Saturdays to cut the lawn. But it was one of those things where I was up and I was like, well, I'm going to do Decoded Podcast at 8:30. I don't want to do nothing. It was, hey, you're going to love this. It was either cut the grass or do some report card work.
Fair enough.
The carrot, baby. Motivation and discipline. Well, this was season 4, episode 37.
Just to drop, I'm looking forward to trying to put together our coffee table books. So all the pictures that are a part of that have been a part of our learning, I guess I don't want to call it, it's not documentation. It's maybe it's the dad details. No one's going to understand it except you and I. And sometimes we don't even understand it. Like a year from now, we're going to look at that and go, what was that conversation about?
Yeah. A year from now.
The carrot. So yeah, looking forward, just getting through the final steps of all those scans of all the pictures. Definitely looking to build in the discipline. So as soon as we're done the convo, I scan it and it's done right away. On that, I'm going to put it on the scanner right now. And yeah, it's just so much easier if I do it right away. But hey, thanks for the big combo.
Yeah, no problem. Listen, yesterday was National Hamburger Day or National Burger Day.
Yeah, I know of this. I like that.
And I tweeted out two of my favorite burgers that I've had over time. And my buddy Jamie Rodrigue, who has a YouTube channel, he suggested Burger Crawl. So it's like, that's on my radar. I mean, I doubt it'll happen with Jamie just because of COVID and stuff, but.
Where's Jamie working out of? Is he local for you?
Dude, he's down the street. Yeah, he lives in Waterloo. He's down the street. Okay,
cool. Very cool.
So I would love to do a burger crawl with anybody and record it, right? Because mm-hmm. There's some creation that could be happening there, big time creation.
I agree.
And that's it. So enjoy your burgers. I guess your family's having burgers today. That's great.
Yeah, we just have to decide whether or not we do it for dinner or go right for lunch.
I say you do both, bro.
You know what? I could probably persuade the fam. I could probably, they wouldn't take much persuasion. That's one of those things, right? That's one of those things. I just say, hey, let's, it's good and bad. My influence on the growing cholesterol issue in my own household is probably because I'm like, hey, yo, let's go get burgers. Hey, who wants fish and chips? Like, I'm bad for that.
Mm.
And then, you know, there could be stuff being prepped on the table or on the counter. Like, you know what? I'm kind of like the most dangerous thing on the weekend is for me to say, I'm kind of craving. Because then my family's like, what's Clough craving? Like last weekend, it was ramen. I was craving ramen. And I'm like, you folks don't have to. This is what I'm craving. They're like, oh, no, we'll do ramen. We're good. I'm like, okay, let's go get ramen.
Right on.
All right, dude. Have a wonderful day.
You too. And we'll talk to you later.
Absolutely. Ciao.
Peace.